Welcome to the Positively Past, Positively Present podcast. My name is Ketlo, and I'm a researcher practitioner in the field of arts and health, and I've been collaborating with Positively UK since 2016. This series of podcasts came about through a project we've been doing looking at Positively Women's Archive, where we've been looking at the power of the archive to allow us to look back in order to be able to move forward. On the podcast each week, we'll speak with different guests who have been connected with Positively UK, both past and present. We explore different themes relating to the experience of women living with HIV. All of these have been recorded online as we wanted to include a wide range of voices, both safely and across borders. The nature of these conversations cover topics that some listeners might find difficult. So we invite you to please consult the episode's show notes before listening to the podcast. And finally, huge thanks to colleagues both at Positively UK and the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama who've helped bring these podcasts together. We hope you find these discussions illuminating and insightful. Welcome to the Positively Women Past and Present podcast. I'm Kat Lowe, and today I'm joined by Janine McGregor-Reed. Janine is a peer navigator for Positively UK and is part of the multidisciplinary antenatal team at Homerton Hospital, working with specialist HIV midwives. Janine is also on the writing guidelines group for Beaver on the management of HIV infection in pregnant women. Welcome, Janine, and thank you for joining us today. Today we're going to be talking about motherhood and pregnancy. So welcome, Janine, and could you tell us where you're speaking to us from today?
Hi, I'm speaking to you from my home in Hackney, just down the road from Homerton Hospital, yeah.
Awesome, thank you. I'm speaking to you from a shed at the bottom of my garden, and my neighbours just started mowing the lawn, so apologies in advance if there's anything too noisy. So Janine, just to start off with, we're really interested in hearing what links people to Positively Women. How did you first hear about the organisation?
I first heard about Positively Women not long after I was diagnosed, which was in 1991. Yeah, it was one of the first support groups that I attended, and it was where I saw that there could be a very varied response to being diagnosed with HIV. At the time, being so early in the epidemic, back then it was very much still being referred to as AIDS as well. So my decision was to inform myself. So I went to Positively UK, I went to Body and Soul, which was at that time based in Ealing. Those were the two that really stuck with me and which I actually attended most. What I did remember about Positively Women very clearly was that you could get therapies there, and that really meant a lot to me, that you could alleviate some of the issues that someone might be having and look to feeling better. I personally knew that I was strong and fit, even though I was in shock. I could not look at sick people and think that's me, because it wasn't what I was experiencing. I was in my late 20s and not willing to accept the diagnosis, which was handed to me in a very poor fashion. It wasn't necessarily on that day, but not long after I was sort of told I had 10 years to live, and I really was very angry about that. I just thought, you do not know what you're talking about. You don't know me. You've taken no time to get to know me. Mm. How could you possibly look at me and think that? And I knew that from a place of having had people die in my life already. And to be quite honest, I don't think if I hadn't have had that experience, I don't know how I would have got through that information.
Yeah.
And I just thought, we'll see about this. I just decided that I was not going to just assume that what I was being told is the case. I was very much of the opinion that I will make my own journey with this condition. I was offered medication when I went to the support groups and saw that other people were on this medication and looking very unwell, I thought, whatever they're having, I'm not having.
Yeah.
So I refused it and proceeded to live my life, you know, try and come to terms with all of the implications of receiving this diagnosis. One of the first things, literally in that first meeting when I was diagnosed, after the shock of realising that it could be true, was, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to have children, which was really just absolutely undermining of everything that I thought I was. You know, it was an assumption of mine that I would be a mother. And the way it just popped into my head, once the possibility of accepting that I had this condition, to find that that was almost like the output from an input was, yeah. Oh my God, you're not going to be able to have kids, was just horrifying to me. It's like, you know, so it left you very much with, what is the purpose of my life then? You know, how am I going to move forward? I wasn't in a relationship at the time. And it took from that time another 7 years for me to become pregnant. I had very few relationships in that time. I had to meet someone that I always felt I had to tell someone. So as it is still now, very exposing, very makes you feel so vulnerable to tell somebody about having this status. And at that time, it's still stigmatizing now, but it was so much more stigmatizing then. And then, you know, you would hear things, people would say it's irresponsible for someone with HIV to get pregnant. For that same reason, everybody thought it was kind of a death sentence.
Mm.
By 1997, I had met my son's father, and I just knew that I could tell him and he wouldn't judge me. And yeah. I knew he really liked me, so so I did. And I guess he was so carried away with the idea of, oh, we're going to be together. he just didn't, it wasn't a deal breaker for him. It wasn't like it was my intention to get pregnant with him.
Yeah.
But it was a happy outcome for myself when I found out that I was pregnant. Where I came up with really a lot of issues with this pregnancy was the fact that I was not on treatment. When I got pregnant, I had not decided to take treatment. I was not convinced. I read everything. They were saying to me, if you don't take treatment, you know, the baby's going to get this infection.
And also we know that particularly in the 90s, there was a huge pressure for mothers with living with HIV to have a C-section because that was the way of reducing presumed to be the sole way of reducing transmission of HIV.
At some point along the pregnancy, I decided, okay, I will take treatment, but I'm not going to have a C-section. And I didn't. you know, I was quite shocked at some of the things that were said to me. Especially now working in healthcare myself, I can fully see how much, you know, people must have been talking about me behind the scenes in the health, because they believe they know the outcomes. But I absolutely knew from within that I was healthy, that this pregnancy, everybody was just like, you're glowing, you know, I felt well, you know, yeah. I started treatment early enough in the pregnancy. Plus they made me have a drip I had to walk around with a big drip in my arm whilst giving birth.
That's practical.
Yeah.
That's
really practical. It's very impractical when you're, well, I literally had to design my own birthing arrangements. You know, like they were just in shock. Like I had to chase a midwife out of the room because they were coming in whilst I'm in labour going, it's still not too late to have a C-section, you know.
Oh my God. Jeez.
I will lose my mind with you. Yeah. Just go away. And thankfully, eventually I got a replacement because I had a very long labour with my first child. I got a replacement midwife who just was like, oh, I can see, because I was walking, I was doing lots of walking, I didn't want to lie on the bed. She said, you lie down. I'm like, why would I be lying down? I need gravity. I'm squatting, yeah. I'm doing all sorts. And then she brought in a Japanese birthing stool and I sat on that and boom, you know, baby was out in not very much time at all. And then I also had my cousin, my sister, my partner in with me while I was giving birth. And then there was I literally, as soon as the baby had come out, I literally watched almost a fight come out, start over the baby in terms of, do we wash off? My partner was saying, wash any sign of the blood off. Like, my cousin was like, leave the baby, just wrap it. The nurse was like, didn't know what to do. I was just like, oh, well, I think I did my part.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff they could have sorted out, researched beforehand. Yeah.
You know, what I would maintain till now, there has for so long been a hyper vigilance over women with HIV and transmission. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not a serious subject. It is. But hundreds of babies have been born HIV negative. It's very clear, almost like a mission to have every woman have a C-section went on for was outrageous. The fact that I knew in myself, like back then, that I would be having a vaginal delivery, that's what I did. Had, you know, my children are both negative, but you know, I literally had a doctor say to me, well, if anything happens, you know, if anything goes wrong, on your head be it. And I was just like, I could not believe it. They said that to me. I'm just like, well, who else's head is it going to be? It's my baby. It's not like you care about this child more than me. You know, you did not stop to think for a minute that I might have researched and then that I know myself. I always say to women, you know, being pregnant is such a intuitive, there's so much communion and information between coming between yourself and that, you know, growing fetus. And you're aware of your health and you're aware of your capacity and how you're thinking about how you're going to cope and all of these things. To put a woman in a position where it's almost as like she can't think for herself, it's insulting.
Yes.
I am not going to willingly walk into unnecessary danger. I have thought about this very carefully.
And actually, it's stigmatizing and it's finger pointing. And it's like, actually, it's saying that the woman is at fault. The woman does not know. And like medical science knows best. And I think, yes, we know science is brilliant, but actually to take away that the woman's knowledge and self-knowledge of her own body, her fetus, is hugely discriminatory.
Yes, it definitely was a environment where it's like, we know best and do as you're told, please.
Well, yeah.
No. I mean, not here.
Brilliant. So Janine, you hold your ground, you say, no, this is my way. And how did you take those experiences into your work?
They were so key to me even wanting to do the work of working in HIV, because I knew that from the moment I had my child, it was like just a revelation. Oh my God, I'm back in normal life. It's like you're back in the mainstream of life. Like, mm-hmm. HIV had been so othering, so marginalising. And now you're a mother looking after a baby, like every other mother looking after a baby.
Janine, what you've described, that lack of respect, that lack of dignity, the lack of acknowledgement of your own understandings and knowledges as a woman, the suggestion that actually you're placing your child at risk, the fear-mongering that's surrounding that. How did you take those experiences where you turned back to those doctors and said, no, I know best, this is my child? How do you take that into your work today?
So no one's going to know me better than me. That's just a fact, and it's true for everyone. The question is whether you give your power away to someone else because they're wearing a white coat or not. Uh-huh. And I wasn't about to do that. and I'm so thankful that, you know, now in 2022, working in the team that I do at Homerton, there is no trace of that, or almost no trace of that, in certainly in this specialist team. And they are so supportive of women owning their pregnancies. And the standard that I like to use, or we very much try to use, is that there really needs to be so little difference between what would be given as a, taken as a normal pregnancy, you know, normal in inverted commas, and a woman living with HIV. The only difference is medication, which you take and the baby takes for, you know, and your the medication you're taking, you probably were on it before you even got pregnant, and the baby takes it for probably 2 weeks if everything's, you know, has no complexities around it. And you have your journey. Certainly I felt, and I have watched other women feel it, is that transformation that can happen as soon as you have your baby, which is that it puts HIV into perspective. Women living with HIV are no less, you know, akin to these emotions than anyone else. We are not sad mothers. We can be as happy as any other mother. You know, I schooled myself in empowerment. That's what I would say. And I very much wanted to do that for others. You know, every woman's journey is different, and some women need a lot of direction because their lives are sometimes so complex. I could not have had the confidence if I, like some of the women that I work with, had an ongoing immigration case and no money and, you know, this, the confidence I have comes partly from being a citizen, from, you know, having rights that other people who are positive don't have. So, you know, there are layers to these things. I work with a lot of women who had children maybe 15 years ago. They're still having children. And it's like, I had all these cesareans before. Can I have a vaginal delivery? Can I breastfeed this last baby? Just to try it? And it's like actually playing with their own experiences as mothers. It's the most blessed thing to see. I mean, I absolutely have been so impressed with some of my ladies that I've worked with, just how much you see how much it means to them to even just entertain the idea, even if they don't carry it through.
And I think that's exactly what it is that actually in your role as a peer navigator at Homerton, you're actually holding a space for them to ask all of the questions that any woman who happens to be pregnant is experiencing, irrespective of their HIV status. Could you tell us a bit more about what you do as a peer navigator?
As a peer navigator, I work with all people who are diagnosed HIV positive. So that's men, women, different age groups, different sexualities. And it's about helping them to feel more comfortable with that status. Mm. So I work with them one-to-one. I'm very much looking to try and help them to reach back into the community settings. So referring them back into other groups in Positively UK and even wider than that. So a lot of the people that I will spend a lot of time working with have issues around housing, issue around sharing their status with family and community. They have issues around immigration status, poverty, food poverty. It's desperate for many, many people. And, you know, it's like you want to always find the silver lining or and all I can really say is, you know, you look at your children and they somehow give you that drive I will find a way. That is the beauty of children. You know, for many people, it's very humbling to have to come and ask for a food bank voucher when they never have had to.
Yeah.
But, you know, you cannot just watch your children go hungry. So they do it. And they have to find out the other resources. So it becomes a learning process. And hopefully with that learning process, you can also encourage them to, like, look, there is a community out here of positive people who support themselves in so many ways. The fact of being able to speak openly about all your issues can only really be done. I have never seen it as well done as it is done amongst peers.
A question that we ask everyone on this podcast is, looking to your past, what are you bringing from your past into your future?
A very positive attitude, I would say. Determination, a real sense of things can change. I think life is political and we have to change the conversations. Give people the information and the awareness to make that your strength. It is possible. Everything that I have been through since I became positive, actually, you know, I mean, I went through things before I was positive, which were stigmatizing, none the least of being of my colour and my heritage. So actually, being that I'm proud of that, though I've got other kinds of messages about it, these all become confirmed. HIV can be a confirmatory thing, just as my colour is. It is something that I have met and have as part of my experience that I am proud of how I manage it. And we can only talk about how we manage things. Are we meeting it with courage and, you know, a smile and, you know, forward thinking and making alliances with other areas of life, other areas of health, other ways of looking at, you know, what is important. For me, sometimes, like, just saying HIV is too boxing. What we're actually talking about is life. You know, what kind of life are you living? Is it a life that is encompassing of your humanness?
Janine, thank you. You are...
I've got on a podium.
You're extraordinary. Thank you for coming on and talking to us. And you just rock, lady. So thank you.
No worries. All right. All the best.
Thanks.
See you all.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more, please like and subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends. If you are affected by anything shared in the podcast, please see the Positively UK website for a list of their services and other support organisations. I've been Kat Lowe. These podcasts have been edited by Chuck Blue Lowry, coordinated with Joy and Solidarity by Mariam Shahar-Adin and Chriselle Dukuzin, music by Jessica Roach.